Welcome to Farmscape Online. I'm Bruce Cochran. My guest is Dr. Al Mussel, the research lead with Agri-Food Economic Systems. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Mussel.
Well, thanks for having me, Bruce.
Agri-Food Economic Systems has released an independent agri-food policy note, which examines the impact of the conflict in the Middle East on energy and food and resulting adjustments that will need to occur. First of all, what prompted this examination and what was looked at?
Well, Bruce, it's a fluid situation. It's a very complicated situation. There's a lot of layers to it. And the one thing that I wanted to do some thinking and share my thoughts with was just the fact that fundamentally agriculture and food is affected by an energy crisis brought about by conflict differently than any other segment of the economy. And I think we needed to understand that. And then, of course, when you have these sorts of effects, these are not, sort of things that evolve in little steps over time. They just hit you like a 2x4 up the side of the head or something like that. And it's difficult for us to understand. And that was really the motivation.
To whom is the Agri-Food Policy Note expected to be of interest and why?
Well, I think it's probably of interest to everyone. Farm groups, producers, ag businesses, and then of course people involved in agricultural policy and more broadly.
What impact has the conflict had on energy and food, and what has been that impact?
Well, of course, there's the obvious things, Bruce. Fuels. Quite a bit more expensive in short order, and of course, when you affect the prices of your energy complex, you affect the petrochemical complex, which is manifest in particularly your nitrogen fertilizers, but it also gets into some of the byproducts, which in turn impact phosphate fertilizers. It's going to get into pesticides. It's going to, and that's of course be above and beyond just straight the transportation cost of all the various inputs and outputs that farmers and consumers are involved with. So there's all that. But what I think you could easily miss is that when you're talking about hydrocarbons, fossil fuel complex. And in agriculture, we deal with carbohydrates. Well, if they sound like similar words, they are. They're both calories. We transform one into the other on a regular basis, all the time, in fact. So you can't have a crisis in hydrocarbons and not have a crisis in carbohydrates. It could be a little bit delayed, but this will come around, and that's the worry that we have now.
In terms of availability, affordability, and accessibility of both energy and food, what has changed, and what are the implications of that change, and what can we expect moving forward?
Well, let me illustrate it this way, Bruce. When oil is more expensive, diesel fuel and gasoline are more expensive. While when gasoline and diesel fuel are more expensive, then we turn to the potential to make biofuels to try and extend what we have or replace it. So in the case of ethanol, we can extend gasoline, limited by a blending wall, but we can extend it to some degree. With respect to diesel fuel, we can make renewable diesel fuel out of waste fats and oils, and then of course your oil seeds, soybean oil and canola oil. So that I think illustrates the direct connection. You're going to take carbohydrates essentially, and you're going to convert them into something that substitutes for a hydrocarbon. But of course, when you as you do that, that tightens us. We already have a tight supply on the hydrocarbon side that supports our carbohydrates because it's tightened up the fertilizer situation quite significantly. So, I mean, there's been a lot of discussion around the fertilizer that's manufactured in the Middle East, in the Gulf states. But when you've got very expensive natural gas, for example, landed into Europe, they start to knock off their fertilizer plants because they don't have the margin to make anhydrous, urea, UAN, et cetera, which just further tightens this up. So I hope I'm expressing, you know, you've got this sort of a canopy of effects which go back and forth between carbohydrates and hydrocarbons, and it's all kind of collapsing in on us. Now, one of the things that complicates this, and you know, I'm an ag and food researcher. I'm not a petroleum researcher, so I had to learn all this. But apparently, like in the developed world, North America, Western Europe, we were very close to peak demand for gasoline already, and diesel fuel isn't too far behind it. In other words, over time, you know, it was going to decline in consumption. The difficulty we face now is if you're going to say, well, sure, well, now we need to bring in biofuels to augment the supply of fossil fuels, which is much shorter in the world. How do you get the investment when you're going to be expanding into a declining market? And surely it's going to decline faster now. Like, you know, people are going to be looking at more fuel efficient vehicles. They'll be looking at electric vehicles and so on, where they otherwise might not have. So that's sort of this fluid or deteriorating situation that just makes supply so much tighter.
Just how complex are these challenges? How do they need to be addressed at this point? And by whom? And what are the potential ramifications?
Yeah, so you know, just dealt with the issue of short supply on fossil fuels and how that flips over into biofuels. But then you take the next step on biofuels. On renewable diesel fuel in particular, renewable diesel fuel is not a blended product. You can, you know, it's 100% blend. So what you will see, and just last week, and I assume this may actually have predated this crisis, so it may be unrelated, or perhaps they've ramped it up in recognition of the fact, but we have very aggressive increases in renewable diesel fuel mandates in the United States. Okay, so you know, we already have a situation in which we've got well over half the soybean crop in the United States is crushed, and then over half of that is going directly into renewable diesel fuel production. Well, you know, you can only make renewable diesel fuel out of rendered fats and waste oils, which are essentially fixed in supply. They're, you know, given by your livestock slaughter and your waste restaurant greases and oils and so forth. And then what you bring in from your oilseed crops, primarily soybean oil and canola oil. Well, anytime you crush soybeans, you make soy meal. Okay, well, if all the demand pull at this point is on the oil side, and that's been true for a few years now, actually, well, then we're going to originate all this soy meal. What are we going to do with all the soy meal? And, you know, over the course of my career, where a lot of my work has been in livestock, you know, when you go to balance a ration, the grain is the relatively inexpensive part. So you fill what you can there, and then you top that off with your protein, right? That's the part that you really economize on. Well, by all appearances, this is going to turn right on its head. So your soybean meal and where you're using it, canola meal, is going to be the cheap part of the diet, and the, you know, whatever it is, the corn, the wheat shorts, the barley, et cetera, that could end up being the expensive part. We don't have a lot of experience with that. And, you know, I think there's going to be some nutritionists that are going to be asking, well, you know, exactly how much, rather than economizing on soybean meal in a pig diet, for example, how much soy meal could I feed a pig without making them sick? Because I'm sure you can push it too far and you'll have issues, or you'll have carcass quality issues or what have you. But as far as I can tell, I don't think we know a whole lot about that. So that's something that's, you know, may seem very detached from current events, but I can see that coming.
What are the implications in terms of food affordability, energy affordability, and accessibility and availability?
Well, I guess they're all bad, right? I mean, you're going to have more, just about more expensive everything, and you know, because we're in this constrained world where, you know, basically everything affects everything else. I read something the other day. They were referring to this as resource nationalism. So you've got countries suddenly competing for all these natural resources. Everything's going to get more expensive. So, yeah, I guess just to pick one of the points out that, you know, the food affordability, well, you know, in Canada, I think we're going to want to be prepared to rally around, you know, some of our cities that people in the lower income strata, because food's going to be darn expensive, to say nothing of fuel, of course. And then, well, elsewhere in the world, this is a disaster, because they spend much more of their income on food than Canadians do. So, you know, I would be looking for bread riots, and you could get political unrest that occurs elsewhere in the world as a result of this. I'd like to think that we could, you know, we have an off-ramp here, and we could somehow mitigate this situation. But at this point, Bruce, it's not evident.
What needs to be considered moving forward? What are the potential solutions?
Well, one, I guess maybe I'll just take a piece of that. You know, so you know, what we're talking about here is it's a deteriorating situation, and you know, your producer listeners know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, your fuel is dramatically more expensive. You know, maybe you've got your fertilizer booked and so on, but eventually, like when the initial volumes of fertilizer will be, I would expect, in inventory just about everywhere, and probably have been since before this all started. But eventually, the fertilizer blenders will have to refill their inventory, and when they do, that fertilizer, I would expect, will be significantly more expensive. So you know, it's telling a story that kind of everybody's worse off. Now, the one thing that's interesting is, you know, because Canada is such a remarkably well-endowed nation in terms of natural resources, you know, not just on the energy side, the hydrocarbons, but of course also the calorie side, because we're, you know, a very large net exporter of farm products and food products. But also, you know, we're learning, and again, I don't know this stuff. I have to learn it from somebody else. But you know, some of these byproducts like sulfuric acid that are attached to the petrochemical complex that are short in the world. Well, it turns out we're a very big power in those markets as well. So in terms of you know, soft power and what we have to offer the world at a time where all these things are getting very scarce and so on, Canada's well positioned.
How can anyone interested get more information?
If you go to the Agri-Food Economic Systems website, You can download the policy note and my contacts there. Anybody that has any questions or comments or things I've forgotten or what have you, I'm happy to respond to them.
And is there anything you would like to add?
No, I think that's all, Bruce. It's still very much a fluid situation, and you know, maybe there's something that'll happen in the intervening period that'll make a lot of this it'll render it less significant and so on. And to be honest with you, I hope that happens. Just not evident right at the moment.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Bruce.
Our guest has been Dr. Al Mussel, the research lead with Agri-Food Economic Systems. For Farmscape Online, I'm Bruce Cochran.